Now, let's try. Now, let's try. It's working.
Now, let's try.
It's working. Okay, I'm going to start recording. Good afternoon. Welcome to our first exercise session in this course. I'm going to introduce you the teaching assistant in this course will be Claire Trinquet. She will actually explain you the lab and all that, and then we can start example by example. So all the instructions are here. We can play a bit with the software, and then that's the first part of the exercise, lab exercise. We have quite a few programs to demonstrate, and they will probably be interesting for most of you. And then we have, in the end, the numerical exercise in which we are going to play a bit with unicity distance and then to compute the Shannon entropy and things like that. So very, very easy examples. So you can proceed. And you see here is the software, 0102. So you just run, and they are all in C#. So for the people that don't use Microsoft, we'll try. Claire has actually translated some of these programs into C, and they can be run in C++, and they can be run on Linux or Mac. So we are going to provide the source, but not for all the programs, no, for some of them. And some of them have originally been written in C, and they can be run directly. But we shall see in the future, not today. Okay, so please proceed. Talk to the microphone.
Okay. So you can find everything on Blackboard for the softwares and the exercises. You can download as a zip file, and yeah, you'll have everything. So the first software that we're going to try is the transposition software. Inside the files you find in bean debug, you find the key.txt file and the plaintext file, which is what the program is what the program is going to use to run. You see that, and at the end it will produce a report.txt file, which I will show you after. This one is not. So here you see, I don't know how much you see. Yeah, so you can see first you have the plain text, which is the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. You have the key, which is the permutation. And from that it calculates the ciphertext here. And then it deciphers it again with the same key. Well, the inverse permutation for the key. Yeah, so you can try by hand if you want, or if you want to train later for the exam.
Yeah, we run them first, and then we can reserve some time for the students to play.
Yeah.
So just one thing. The sentence, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog, it's not... It has not been chosen just by chance. You can see that in this sentence you have all the letters of the alphabet. So in this sentence, and this particular sentence was used to test whether the teletype writers work correctly. So by typing this, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog, you check all the letters. Yeah. So that was... And that's one thing. Another thing is, you see, we have grouped the letters into five tuples. That's quite common in cryptography. So even though our permutation is of length 4, When you write the plain text, the key and the ciphertext, you usually group them into the groups of five letters. And why is that? Because that minimizes the chance of error. When you type, et cetera, so if it is greater than five, you the probability of making a typing mistake increases. That was obtained on empirical basis. So that's why five is the optimal length of these groups. So usually the real cryptographers, when they encipher, they take the message and they, no matter what the kind of cipher system is, what kind of key is, and what the length of the key is, they always group the letters into the groups of five. Yeah. That was just a small digression. From historical perspective,
today. So here you have the result, and if you check again in the debug folder, you find that's exactly the same thing written as what we had in the console. So yeah, so you can check even after you close it what was the answer and how it worked. Next we're doing the monoalphabetic demo. So first you have the plain text again, which is a text about cryptography, the method used for blah 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 blah. Then you have the key, which is the permutation of the alphabet, and then it's enciphered, and then yeah, again the inverse key and the deciphered plain text. So yeah, there's not much more to say on that one. Again, if you want to use it to practice and check that you understand how it works, you can try it on by changing the plain text file or the key file. Then we're doing the Cedar cipher. So again, we have the plain text in groups of five letters. The key, in this case, the key is just that we shift by three positions to the left. So then you can see, so yeah, the alphabet just shifted by three to the left here. And then the ciphertext and the inverse key, and then the deciphered ciphertext again.
And what is the inverse key? The inverse key is the alphabet shifted three positions to the right.
Then the shift cipher demo. For example, now I put 5, so here we have the alphabet shifted by 5. And then again the ciphertext, the inverse key, which is the alphabet shifted by 5 but to the right instead. And then the original sentence again. So here we have the visionary cipher. So we're starting again with a full text in groups of 5 letters, and then we repeat the key, which makes it slightly easier to understand the shift every time. And then the ciphertext. So you can see that for each group of 5 letters, for example, the first T is encrypted with the C, so we shifted 2 letters to the right, which becomes a V. Then the H with the O becomes also a V, and so on. And then for the decryption, you do the same. You take the ciphertext, repeat the key, and you just do the inverse, which means that V with the C is shifted 2 letters to the left, so that it becomes a T, and so on. And you can do that for the whole text, although it's not so interesting to do by hand. It's just calculations. And the Beaufort cipher. So here again, we have the plain text, the key here, again in groups of 5, and the ciphertext. So yeah, you can again try this yourself to practice. Have this one on my computer, could you?
This is the army version with 3 wheels. So one moves every time, another moves sometimes, and the third one also moves sometimes. And then you have a reflector that is not shown. Now, the initial position of these wheels, it's actually the key. So if you start from a different position, then for the same plain text, you get the different ciphertext. So, for example, I can move. I can start from some other position, you see. If I start from this position, then I press, for example, A, I get S, you see. Now I can start from a different position. I can move all the other wheels, start an A, and it will be another one. So now, what we can do with this simulation, we also have this Stecker board, Brett. You see, we can put some connections here, etc., etc. So this is, then the machine behaves as if when you press an A, as if you have pressed some other letter. And then the rest of the transform is the same. Another thing, you can change the wheels. So there is a button here. Open cover, you see. So click here. So you can change the wheels. You have two spare wheels, you see? So I say, okay, I move this letter, this wheel here, and I put this one here. And so that's another wheel with another different wiring. So there are 26 factorial possible wirings on each wheel, obviously. So then I can change another wheel. So I have two spare wheels. And now, then I press here, so that's close cover. Then I set the initial position, for example. So the key would be, somebody sends 5, 10, 8. So that's the starting point, you see. And then I type the letter, so the message. M-E-S-S, you see, twice S, two different letters. A-G-E. Now, if I were careful, then I would write down this ciphertext. Then I use the radio and Morse code, and then I send the enciphered message to the other party. So it's interesting to play with it. This cipher was broken already during the Second World War by the British, as I said. It was broken just because of this reflector. So there was a small statistical bias. A letter can never be replaced by itself. Behind this board of permutation. So that's what was exploited. Yeah. So you can see the movie Enigma. It's very interesting with Kate Winslet. It's an interesting movie. Yeah. So I guess. The wheels by themselves, they are the key. So there was a preamble of the enciphered message. When you send the message, it says, I have used this, and this wheel, and this wheel I used from the 6th position, this wheel from 10th position, and the third wheel from the 8th position, something like that. That's how the other party sets up the same position and the same wheels. Otherwise, you cannot decipher. So you can, here you have help, a PDF file that you can read where you have all the details, and you have also the details about Enigma. You see, there was Enigma with four wheels, that's the Navy version. So Kriegsmarine is in German, it's the Navy. And the key settings, how you do it, and setting the reflector. This one, Umkehrwalze, in German. My German is terrible. So, and then you can change the rotors. So it's a nice cartoon, you see. And here is this plugboard, Steckerbrett, in German. And the starting position, and you have the text box. So what you type, this was not on the original machine. So this is the simulation that tells you what you have obtained. You see, this is the plain text, and this is the ciphertext. The quick brown fox jumps, so the same thing. So this is a typical test message. And you have a lot of things. So you can play with this. Well, of course, the machine also only has a historical significance, so it's just, but it's very nice simulation, so that's why it's interesting. So do you want to save? No, I'm not going to save the changes. So that was about Enigma. Interesting to play. And then you have other simulations.
Then we have the Vernam cipher. don't know how. Maybe like this is better.
No, I can explain. I said in the class, it's for teletype writers. So the original cipher was intended for usage by typists in these teletype writer systems, and the most often used alphabet there was this ITA 2, so International Telegraph Alphabet Number 2. So it's a 5-bit code. This figs, that means what you type after that. When you type, there was a special key on the teletypewriter keyboard. So one was called figs and one was called letters. So if you say, if you type figs, then what you type next will be treated as numbers. You see? And if you type letters, what you type next will be treated as letters. And you will see that some numbers and some letters have the same code. Because 2 to the power of 5, that's the maximum number of possible encodings. It's just 32 symbols. And you have more symbols than 32 to encode, and that's why there are two... one encoding is used for two possibilities, for numbers and for letters. And for example, here it's, this is my birthday, 14th of 11th of 1962, and then... you have the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. So this would be punched on the tape. So usually the plain text was on the white tape. And the tape was, as I said in the class today, so it was something like this. So these holes, they are used for the wheel that moves the tape. And then you have, for example, 1 1 0 1 1. 1 is hole, 1 1, and then 0 is no hole, 1 1. So that's after the that's fixed. And then you have next encodings, etc., etc., and you punch this tape. On the plain text, which on the teletype writer, you type, and what you get is the text on the roll, which is not used for anything, maybe for archives. But what you get on the side of this teletype writer machine, there was a tape punch, and on this you get such a tape. Then you take the key, and the key tape was usually yellow, to make difference, and it was in a package of this size. Something like this, that size, quadratic, okay? And each package consists of 120,000 symbols. On one tape. So you could, in cipher, 120,000 symbols, which is, well, for today's measures, it's not much, but, well, it's decent quantity of symbols that could be enciphered with one tape. And it is one-time pad, so once you use the tape, you discard it. Never reuse it for another message. What you obtained, there is a special device that performs XOR of two tapes. So the device was this big, and like 15 kilos of weight, and it consumed some electricity, you know. And this teletype writer, maybe I can show you next time. So it was this big, like 50 kilos. Everything was very heavy, because it has to be stable and very, very noisy. It's an electromechanical device. So there was a motor inside, many, many things. Then when you perform this XOR, you get a third tape, which was white, and then there was a reader of the tape on the teletype writer from the side. You read this in cipher, that cipher text, and you send it to the line directly. The speeds were 50 bits per second. and the good ones 100 bits per second, and towards the end of the usage 200 bits per second. That was a miracle. 200 bits per second, very slow for today's concepts. You see? And then on the receiving side, the other way around. You receive the tape with the ciphertext, then you use the same key, so the box with the yellow tape, you provide it in that device, you produce the plain text tape, and you get this. So the ciphertext, the key, and the plain text is the same. Also historically interesting, however, this actually is the same principle on which all the ciphers today are based. So you can imagine that some other code is used, but it's all binary. The operation is XOR, and the cipher is perfectly secret.
Yeah, but
so when you run it, you can run another one in parallel.
I'll start it and then.
Yeah. It may take 20 minutes to try all the possible keys just on a very short.
Yeah, so this one is for trying to decipher ciphertext and trying with all possible keys and trying to decipher and find meaningful plain text. Yeah, that's just 5 letters.
Yeah.
On the left, you can see that's the key, and on the right, that's the ciphertext that it would give. So the key is still in AA, so it's gonna take some time. We can come back to that after. And then this one. This one. So this one is for calculating the entropy and mutual information and conditional entropy of different variables. So can you see? Is it big enough? So first you have the table of the joint probabilities of X and Y. So here is the different values of X and the different values of Y. And this, for example, is the probability that X is equal to 1 and Y is equal to 1. And this would be the probability that X is equal to 2 and Y is equal to 4, and so on for the whole table. Then we can, from that, calculate the marginal probabilities for X. So, yeah, this one is the probability that X is equal to 1, which we get by summing all the values here. Then that X is equal to 2 by summing all the values in this column, and so on. And we can also have the probabilities of Y by summing by lines instead, by row. Yeah, so you can get the values by calculating that yourself. And then from that we can calculate Shannon's entropy of the variable X using the formula of the sum of the probabilities and the logarithm base 2 of the probabilities. You have the formula for that in your lecture, in the PowerPoint. Then we can calculate the conditional entropy, and then the mutual information from that. Keep that in mind, you'll have to do it for the exercises later. But yeah, the formulas, you have everything in the lecture, so you can find that. Is this one done? No.
You're still
we'll check back on it after. then we have the... This one is for calculating the unicity distance. So first it asks for the cardinality of the alphabet. For example, we can say if we have the...
Yeah,
26 for the English. This is not my keyboard. Number of key.
This is interesting. So,
number of
try 26 factorial. Use the calculator. It's here. I think they have a factorial. Here. And then copy that. This should work, but you have to remove these commas.
Right.
I think this will work.
Yeah. And then you get just directly the unicity distance with the formula that you saw.
27. So we got that in the class, if you remember. We did that calculation in the class. Which means you will need 28 letters to intercept of the cryptogram, and then if you, in theory, try all the possible keys, these 26 possible keys, and with this cryptogram, you try one key and try to get this cryptogram, try another, etc., etc. After you try them all, you will get just one message that is meaningful. So that would be the real one.
Might just be a little bit too many keys to try in that
course.
Case.
Because I'm saying, and that's why I'm saying that it's just a theoretical possibility.
And then we get to this one.
So the last two ones, they are, I think they are last, or there are more.
No, I think it's just...
careful, said that. Okay, so the three last ones, they are actually interesting.
Yeah.
Now we are going to break some.
Is it... Oh.
Maybe you didn't...
No. It's this one that is still going.
Now you can play with this program. And did you try that before? You know how to...
Yeah.
Okay.
I used it last year anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so in this case, we have the cryptogram here. And in here, we can see the frequency of the every letter in the cryptogram. And here we have the normal order of the symbols of how frequent they are in the English language usually. So in this case, we see that the letter that is the most used in the cryptogram is N, when it should be E, or at least it should be in the normal English. So if we try it, we see that, so here is the cryptogram, but only with the N's that have been replaced by E. And then ask if we're satisfied with the substitution, so we can say yes, and then continue trying to decrypt it. So then we can look at the second letter, which is an E, when the second letter in English should be a T. So we can type that in. And then it prints the same thing, and we can see, for example, that maybe the first word is the, with
so
a T and the
difficult.
E.
So now you don't use the prefix. Mm. Now you assume that the first word is probably the article, the. Okay? So you say that the substitution for...
That was E and T.
U is H. easier will be with the rest.
And then like this, you can decrypt the whole cryptogram. Yeah, maybe we don't have to do that here.
No, no, you can try, for example, Y with N.
Yeah.
Of course, we cheat because we are cheating because we can see that in the past that the message starts with the metal.
So in this case, you can go on and decrypt the entire cryptogram. And so that's how you can crack a monoalphabetic substitution.
You see, it's relatively easy with the
Then Kaczynski? Kaczynski?
And this is more difficult, but it's possible because the Wigner cipher was not well implemented. So they have a key that is shorter than the message, is repeated, it's not random. So that's what we exploit.
So in this one we're going to try to crack the Wigner cipher. So for this we're using the analysis. So we're gonna try different shifts. I think
yeah,
in this case
can try, you can say 7, for example. You will see that the maximum coincidences will be 24, I think.
Yeah, that's
fine. The length of 5. The others are all smaller. Of this is called autocorrelation. So you use the original message and then you shift by 1. And you count how many times you get the same letter in the original and the shifted version. Then you have 2, and 3, and 4, and 5, 6, 7, and you, the maximum you get on the length of 5, the shift 5, which is probably the length of the key. That's how you determine. Which means that the original cryptogram, you can split into 5 different monoalphabetic cryptograms, and actually not only monoalphabetic but shift ciphers, that they are very easy to crack. And here, this is the cryptogram that you obtain, the first one that you obtain by taking every 5th letter. So the 1st, the 6th, the 11th, etc.
Yeah, in this case, since the length is 5, it's easy to see where you just take the first letter of every group and you get the letters that you have here. And then again, you have the letter statistics for the monoalphabetic ciphertext, so what we just did before. And in this case, G is the one that has the most occurrences.
Yeah, the most frequent one.
So it's
just a second. This message may be too short for guaranteed statistics. So it should be longer than you be sure. So you will see sometimes if we choose the most frequent letter, it will be wrong. So that the part of the reconstructive message will be garbled, but the part will be clear. You will see.
It's always the statistics always work better on the bigger. Texts. So in this case, we see that. What did I say? 9.
So what is the shift?
No, that's not me. I did it. No, I should have written G. I wrote 9. Sorry. I'll just start this one again.
You said the number, not the letter.
Yeah. Oopsie. So here we say that for the first, G is the letter that replaces E. And in this case, the first letter of the key would be a C, if that was the right substitution. And then we have the same for all the letters in the second position in the cryptogram. And then in this one, S is the one that has the highest occurrences. So we can try it and see what that ends up as. So we've got C and O as the key for now. Then same for the third letter in the group. So L is the one most used.
And you will see that this is wrong. So we know that the solution is codes. But if you choose the most frequent one, you get H, which is wrong. Okay, we can now stop and repeat and try the next one in the row. The next most frequent. Just proceed.
Yep. So, yeah, in this case, so we get this as a key and this as a plain text if every substitution that we chose was the right one. As we can see here, it wasn't. So we can try again and, where was it? This one.
Wrong. So, CO, it was good. You have to run the program again.
This one was two.
Yes. And then we, in the next run, we try something else. Not the most frequent one. Which one is next?
There's H.
Okay, we try V. I'm not sure, but we try.
I don't think it is.
It's wrong again, you see. So we can run again.
It's not the same keyboard as my computer, so... So for this one, it was...
Now we have tried L and we have tried B. Okay, which one is next?
Double V, but that's
okay, try.
Not going to be right.
So we should actually do it that way, by frequency. Wrong again. Let's take control. Okay. Until we find the right one. So the cryptanalysis is always trial and error.
Yep. And then after that, I think it's H.
H? You try H. Ah.
And in this case, we do get the D.
D.
And then here is I.
And the last one we'll know.
It wasn't. It was the wrong
was
one.
Wrong.
But so W was next. So if we try W, we actually get
the key is code.
Yeah.
See, and then we get the plain text.
And the plain text makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why we have that.
And we have just one more example.
And the last one is...
So you have careful select. So yeah. What happens if you repeat the key? The plain text one is say A then we use the same key for both. So the ciphertext one will be this one, and the ciphertext two, so they all look random, but the difference, ciphertext one minus ciphertext two gives plaintext two minus plaintext one. So you don't care about the key then, you just subtract the plaintext one from the plaintext two, and you see, you get a part of the message, which quick brown fox, etc. That's actually bad. You should not reconstruct the message. So that's why you should never repeat the key. Okay, let's have a break 10 minutes and leave this program. It will finish probably in a couple minutes. So we are at G. So when we will be at Z, it will be over. So it will take some time. Just let it run. Okay, so I'm going to stop sharing and stop recording, go out from the session. So each hour I do that to separate the recordings. But this one is still recording, so we have double, we have omnum as well. Yeah. 10 minutes break, yeah. Until 4:10. So we can use, the students can use the opportunity to try some of these programs.
Yeah,
and then the third hour we can do the numerical.
then I can write here, but then the people on the recording won't.
What did you want to write?
No, for the exercises after. I can write, but the problem is that the people...
Yeah, sure.
Or I can also take a picture of the...
Yeah, we can both. Okay, I go in the course room.
I was also wondering, I don't know if my email is in the Blackboard page.
Should be, because you have been registered for the course. Uh-huh.
And I want to extract the software. Ah!
Which?
It's like everything.
Strange.
I just did it earlier today to check that everything was working.
Well, I can try on this one. So let's see. If I go to learning materials, topic one, software, transposition, the first one.
I think she took the all software.
All software together, uh-huh. Okay. Then we say save. Ah, but I use some other thing to open this. So I don't use the Windows stuff. I use WinRAR.
Yeah,
7-zip should also work.
Yeah.
So you can install, for example, 7-zip or something. So I managed to open. But it is done in this WinRAR. Software. Did you try one by one?
Yes.
So it's the same. Try to download 7-zip and install. Zip is a command line, or? I mean, is it a command line, or
no,
is it? Strange that it doesn't work in Windows.
7-Zip.
So those that have this problem can download 7-Zip and install it. It will work. Okay. So let's start the recording here. Okay. So now you will get the opportunity to try these programs. So take some time and start these programs and play a bit. So we let you do that. And if you have any question, just ask. Okay? So that is here. So she will explain. Maybe I. Yeah.
Which reminds me.
It's running. It will find the. You see, trying all the possible keys is a lot of keys.
And that's only 5 letters.
If you have just 5 positions, as you have here, it's 26 to the power of 5 positions. And you can imagine 100 letters.
Printing also takes time. But yeah.
Printing takes more time, right?
But yeah, you can try all the other software. Maybe not this one. Then you can also change the plain text and the keys to try different versions and see if you can still manage. Remember this. How do I factor, let's say, something that is not a prime? say 21. Okay? Now 21 is obviously not a prime. So you tried, you cannot divide by 2. So you tried the next prime. So you divide by prime. So you have 7, and then you cannot continue with 3. So divide by 7. Until you get, so 21 is 3 times 7. So the things like that. Some simple facts that people learn in primary school. But you may have forgotten all that because you haven't used that for a long time. And then in secondary school, I know at least in Norway, what they learn is polynomial operation. So how to factor a polynomial, that's also something that we are going to need, but not in decimal. We are going to do it in Galois field. So, you will see. So this is what we need to understand. Print ciphers and block ciphers and the number theory, we shall especially need to understand public key ciphers. Yeah, for the numerical exercises, we've got two questions. The first one about the unicity distance, and the next one about mutual information. So, should I write on the...
You can.
Okay.
Or you can display, and then you can display the solution, and then...
Yeah,
but you can read the text first.
Yeah. So consider the Vernheim cipher and let the length of the key plaintext and ciphertext be n. We encipher messages written in English using capital letters only and no digits, spaces, or other characters. Compute the unicity distance in this case as a function of n and take the Hellman's value for the true rate of English as r equals 1.5. So when you have the numerical exercises, you always have in the next page, the solution. So, yeah.
Yeah, so we can display the solution.
So you can try the exercises yourself and then check the solution right under it. So, yeah. So the alphabet that we're using is length of 26 with only the capital letters. And here we have the formula for the unicity distance as n0 is equal to the entropy of the key divided by the redundancy of the language. So h of z divided by r0 minus r. In this case, we have the key length of the keys of n. length of the key is n, and all the keys are equally likely, which means that h of z is... I should write that. Maybe. Yeah. The entropy of the key is minus the sum of the probability of every key times the log in base 2 of the that probability. But since, so we have an alphabet of n, big N, and the key is of length small n, so we have n to the power of n possibilities for the key, and since the keys are equally likely, the probability for each key is 1 over n to the power of n. When we put that in this equation, we just get so minus n to the power of n times the probability, 1 over n to the power of n, and the log base 2 of the probability. This simplifies to minus log 2 of 1 to the power of n, 1 divided by n to the power of n. And then with the rules of the logarithm, we can just simplify that to a small n times the log 2 of big N, which is what we have here, n times the log 2 of n. So then we have so the Hellman's value for r, which is 1.5, and r0 in this case is equal to the log 2 of n. So when we put all that in our first equation for the unicity distance, we get, as you can see here, n log base 2 of n divided by log 2 of n divided minus r, which simplifies to this equation. I don't think the calculator here has log 2. So,
yes, but you can use the identity. So logarithm
divided
for the
by
base 2.
Yeah.
This is important. So. Logarithm of x for the base 2 is logarithm of x divided by logarithm of 2. So then you can use the logarithm for the base 10, for example.
Okay. Yeah.
And for homework, prove that.
Yeah. So, yeah. We can put that in the calculator, and you can see that it's approximately equal to 1.47n.
So you see, the L0, the unicity distance, is always greater than n in this case. You understand that? So if n is 100, you get a unique solution after trying all the possible 26 to the power 100 keys. You need more. Sim-
then we have the second exercise, which was, so we had a table of joint probabilities, and then we need to calculate the entropy of the plain text, the entropy of H if Y, and the mutual information. As you can read, the first thing we need is the marginal probabilities of X and Y, which are calculated here. So as we saw earlier with the software, we just get the sum of each column and each row. So here 0.06 is the sum of these values, and so on for each column, and same for the rows. And once we have that, we can use the formula to calculate the entropy of the plain text, H of X, as the sum of the probabilities, log 2 of the probabilities. Again, put that in your calculator and you will get the same result, hopefully. And then we need the conditional entropy, which is the H of X if Y. And then we get, as the formula goes, the minus the sum on X times the sum on P on the sum on Y of the joint probabilities, log 2 of the probability of X if Y. We can use the formula to write P of X if Y as P of the joint probability of X and Y divided by the probability of Y. And then once again, we put all the values from that table in our calculator, which gives us a nice answer of approximately 1.97. And then we have the formula for the mutual information, which is that the mutual information is the entropy of X minus the conditional of entropy of X if Y, which gives us a mutual information of 0.151 bits.
Now bits, that's not the bits that we got used to. So this bit in information theory is the measure for entropy and all the unit, binary unit, something like that. So it's not the bit 1 or 0. Okay? That's the first thing. The second thing, the mutual information for a perfectly secure system is 0. So if it is 0, then that means that H of X if Y is the same as H of X, which means that receiving the ciphertext doesn't give you any information about the plaintext. So that's how it should be. And this cipher system is obviously not perfectly secure, because the mutual information, the difference between the entropy of the key, the plain text, and the conditional entropy of the plain text, once you have already received the ciphertext, is no zero. So this is a bad sign. Any questions? Well, if not, I think we are done for today. So,
this is still running.
This result appears.
Almost 1 hour now.
Yeah. So it's because of the printing, probably. So I think I have removed the printing and it took 20 minutes. But anyway, I'll show you the expected result. View, where is source? Aha, I can open the source independently. So try all keys and then try all keys C#. I can open this one independently.
That's the code.
Yeah, I want that.
Oh. You
ah, you mean bin debug and then input. Not report is being written. But key is ABCDE, you see? And the plain text. The plain text is quick. So this is what you have to obtain. Okay, so we don't have to wait that much. So I'll stop this, and next time we'll discuss. Because you see, what's the point here? The point is that both the message and the key are very short, and it may happen that you get this plain text several times. So it's because of this unicity distance. Okay, so we stop, shift F5. Okay.